Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. So glad to have you here with us today because we want to focus in, as we do every week, on how you can have the best possible life and business. How, as a business owner, you can have a life. And, you know, sometimes that's really tough. I mean, it's really can be a struggle to have a great life and also have a great business. Often, a lot of us as entrepreneurs struggle with, the choice between, do I have a great life or do I have a great business? And it's real easy to fall into things like being a workaholic. You know, and it doesn't really matter whether you work from home or you have a big office, you know, and you have hundreds of thousands of employees, it still is very tempting to have a project come home with you. And like you said, you know, if you work from home, that's even more so because, you know, I mean, home with you is where it is. And so you can really quickly buy into the excuse, well, I can just run to the computer real quick and do that. And the next thing you know, a couple hours have gone by, you've invested a whole lot of time, and you're ignoring your family. The other side of that can be very true as well. As entrepreneurs, we have freedom that a lot of people don't understand. So you could take a random Wednesday off. You could just be like, no, I need to be off. You know, I mean, my kid has a play or my son's going to be in his very first baseball game. Those kind of things. Those are the kind of things you became an entrepreneur to want to do because it's so important to you. And that's great. And I encourage everybody to do that. But you can easily then fall into the trap of, well, I'm just not going to work today because, I need to binge watch something on Netflix, which is very tempting, but also not real great for your life or your business. And so we want to really learn how to be balanced in both our life and business. And that's what we want to really focus in on today is that balance. And so there are some fundamental keys that help you have a business that is balanced. And the number one piece of that is realizing that you are building an asset. Go with me on this, okay? Because a lot of times we look at our business based on the cash flow. And I'll never forget, you know, Susie Carter, one of our coaches. Some of you know Susie. Susie's awesome. Hi, Susie, if you happen to be listening. I know you're pretty busy, but if you did happen to catch it, Susie Carter, in one of the very first coaching sessions we had with us, she sat down with Kathy and I, and she was like, look, we need to look at your numbers. What are your numbers? Susie is always going to very first thing want to look at our numbers. She wants to know, what have you made? What did it cost you? All that kind of stuff. And as we began to really take a look at, you know, because our company was exploding, so we felt great about things. It's like, look at all this money we've got coming in. But as we began to break it down, and we were doing a lot of good in the world, but we also discovered that, every single one of the books that we put out, we were losing about $700 to $1,000 minimum on each of those. And I'll never forget, Susie actually said to me, she's like, you know, since you guys like giving away money so much, next time you do a book, write me a check for $1,000 too, because I like money and you like giving it away. So it's a win-win for everybody. And that stung, but it was a really good life lesson because we often fall into that trap of cash flow. There's money coming in to cover the money that's going out. And so we don't see that there really isn't any money. Whereas if we realize that our company is an asset, it's something that should be growing. You know, one of my other coaches, Errol Abramson, I love Errol. I talk about stuff that he's taught me, and I feel like I'm in kindergarten every time he does any teaching. But one of the things that Errol really focused in was that concept of your company being an asset. And I love one of his former businesses that he's not in anymore, happened to be an MLM, and he just skyrocketed in it because, you know, imagine what impact a multi-billionaire can have in an MLM, you know, who already understands and knows how to start and operate businesses. And in his business, he was selling the MLM not as a, you know, make this investment and go see those products. He was literally telling them, this is an investment. And if you buy these products at, you know, $5,000, and you sell them for $15,000, that's three times your money. So if it takes you a week, a year, a month, you know, whatever amount of time frame, that is an amazing return on investment. And it's that whole concept of investment. Our company is investment. And so it needs to be growing. It needs to have all kinds of systems and processes in place in order to be viewed by the outside world as something that's successful. Now, there's a couple of ways that that can happen for you, you know, and you want to have those systems in place if you already have a business. If you're looking at starting a business, got good news for you today. Our guest is actually going to also talk to us about some really good ways that maybe you can actually start out with your company as investment, as opposed to starting out with your company as something that is high risk and may be more likely to be a loss than it is to be a win. And so we want to really focus this whole entire episode on how you can, if you're not, and some of you already are, some of you totally have that mindset, and I applaud you for that. But some of you, today's going to be a transitional phase in your company, because you're going to begin to start looking at your company as an investment portfolio. And every time you have money come in, every time you put time, effort, energy into it, you're going to be thinking back to yourself, can I get a return from this, from what I'm doing? You know, I talk all the time to authors, and a lot of you know that. You know, we help people become bestsellers. And I read a great article the other day, you know, because we're constantly saying, and it's not even something new for me, you know, I mean, before, you know, for years, you've probably heard Lisa Nichols, Susie Carter, others say, you know, that your book is not the thing that's going to make you your money. Your book is an absolute necessity in marketing, but it's not going to be where the cash is going to come from. And I read an article that really drove that home. The article said that the person did the research and they actually found that they were making more money per book as well as overall by selling either like a book that Tony Robbins wrote or Robert Kiyosaki's you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad book or things like that than they were making off of their own book. And that if they really just wanted to make money selling books, to find the books that people are already purchasing and have a way to sell that, that would be the way to make money selling books. Now, the way to get to money as a book person, that's a completely different thing. Because then creating your book is an investment. You invest in it because the marketing that it brings to you brings just exponential ability for you to generate income in the marketplace. And that is one of the key things. We're going to talk a little bit more about that here later on in the episode. One of the key things you want to really focus in on is, are your efforts growing the value of your company, what your company can ask for, demand, and get in the marketplace? Then you're looking at your company as an investment. So, we're going to have a special guest on today, and he's going to really help us take a look at that biggest investment as entrepreneurs we have, and that's our company. Because keep in mind, as Errol says, the biggest thing that you have in your life is your time. Your time is the biggest advantage, biggest investment you have in your life, and you need to spend that time very wisely. So think about that for a little bit. How are you spending your time? And then we will be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time, because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back. All right, so let's jump right into it. We want to take our time, turn it into a valuable, powerful asset, and we're going to do that through our business. And so my special guest today is going to help us learn how to either buy or sell a business in a powerful and dynamic way. So I really hope that you will get out your paper and be able to take some notes as we welcome my guest, David Barnett. Hi, David. How are you today?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing well.
So, David, for people who are unfamiliar with you, tell us a little bit about who you are and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, sure. I'm a single dad with two kids, and basically what I do is I help people buy and sell businesses. And I work with clients all around the world. And I ended up in this position because of a long journey on my own entrepreneurial path, which led, from doing sales to being a finance broker, which led me into the world of business brokerage. And at the end of the day, the model didn't really work well for me or for a lot of my clients. And I ended up leaving the business brokerage world. And I went and started a career with an international banking organization. And then I got pulled back into helping people buy and sell businesses in much the way many of your listeners have gotten into business, basically by people calling me up and me starting to work on the side. And over about a 2-year period of me building a consulting practice on the side of my banking career, I eventually left that career and got full time into helping people buy and sell businesses for the second time, but this time under a very different kind of business model. So now I work as a consultant and not a broker, meaning that I operate from a menu of services and I charge people for what I do to help them on their journey, either buying or selling a business, instead of a commission-based model that brokers would generally use.
So, there's so many things you said in there. The first one that, of course, really caught my attention was the whole single dad thing. Having been a single parent for almost 5 years, I can really relate to that juggle between being a business owner and, having the kids be, it's just you.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you,
and I want to get back more into buying and selling businesses, but because we have that synergy between us, talk a little bit about how you juggle the concept of being, you know, that only parent for your kids and meeting their needs, you know, and still being effective in business.
Well, you know, it's one of the big reasons why I'm in business, because my daughter gets out of school at 3, but my son gets out at 1:45. And so I really did not want to be the, you know, the person with the high-powered career that works and works and works and pays other people to take care of his kids. I wanted to create an opportunity where I could have a life and I could be the person after school and pay for everything. So it actually took a lot of conscious decision making and planning, almost created a business plan for life. And then I had to create the business plan for the business that would support that life. And so it meant choosing a more modest home. It meant making decisions that would give me lower personal overheads, which allowed me to seize the opportunity to get into business for myself when it became obvious to me that I could do it full time, to jump into it basically knowing that I needed a business that I could work at from about 8:30 in the morning until 1:30 in the afternoon, and then maybe some time in the evenings. And so, you know, when I made the leap, everything worked out okay. I was able to have a continuous flow of clients, and I get to take care of my kids every day after school. And so it's worked out well for me, but I think there's a lot of decision-making and planning, sort of conscious thought that's gone into building a life. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think many people do that. I think many people just kind of go with the flow and do what they think is expected of them and end up in these careers where they work 60 hours a week. Especially men, I find, will get sucked into these things that they think they should be doing, you know, to chase either a higher profile or higher status. And they end up, you know, missing out on everything going on at home. And in my case, I knew I had to be the guy at home. So my ex is still in the kids' lives. Because of her career, the amount of time that she can devote to helping out with the kids is limited and varies sometimes. So at different times of the year, I'm almost a 50% parent. And at other times of the year, I have them about 80% of the time. So I had to make something work for me.
Well, and I think that, you know, that's one of the biggest keys, you know, when we're starting a business, whether we're doing it from scratch or we buy it, is that whole concept of what is the life that you want to live? What's the life that you know, need to live right now? As opposed to, I think a lot of times just starting into business, we have these great goals and dreams, but they're not based in the reality of our life. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I do. And you know, I do volunteer work as a mentor for people, young people particularly, who are starting businesses. And one of the things that I see time and again is people will, and you've probably seen this before, Steve, where people will try to estimate the size of a market, and then they'll confidently proclaim that they're going to capture a certain percentage of the market, and they're going to base their plan based on this idea that they will somehow just get a certain portion of the market for whatever it is that they're in. And I always challenge people to go back and look at the customer journey and the sales process and look at how many calls are you going to have to make before you get X number of appointments, and how many appointments do you need to make X number of sales? And so can you make this many calls? Can you make this many appointments? And when you make a sale, does it mean that there's cash right away, or do you have to deliver? And then are you in an industry where people expect to be invoiced and be given 30 or 45 days to pay, for example? And then we sketch out that whole timeline from initial contact to cash coming through the door, and very quickly realize that you know, whatever their projection wasn't realistic at all. It actually has to be based on planning the effort that's going to go into trying to build that business, to make those sales calls, contact those prospects, et cetera.
And in the end, as much as being in business can be a lot of fun, you know, there's just those day to day, how many calls are you going to make? Where are your leads coming from? Things that are just, that's the nature of being in business.
You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, I remind people all the time that business is hard. I mean, there's a reason why the vast majority of people out there never do it. You know, most people, if they can find the job that suits them and they enjoy it enough, that's what they'll do, right? And I think it's very few people who actually say, you know what, I want something different. I want to control my own destiny. And they will actually undertake the challenge of being in business for themselves. You know, a big part of what I do in teaching people how to buy businesses is I help them avoid the risk of starting up. You know, if you step right into a seller's shoes and take over a business that already has customers, employees, inventory, the whole thing, and most importantly, the systems of how to operate the business properly and deliver the product and service, then you avoid risk. And I do workshops and seminars, and one of the things I show people is that buyers basically pay goodwill, which is a value paid to a seller over and above the value of the tangible assets. And that payment is directly related to the fact that the buyer is now avoiding the risk of starting a new enterprise, going through that period of time before you hit the break even, which we never really know how long it's going to be when we start a business. And that's why I always teach people that it's actually faster, easier, and less risky to simply buy a business that's already operating than to start one from scratch.
So there's your first key tip. Really big thing you want to make a note of is, you know, again, we're talking about your time. So what's the best use of your time? Do you want to spend that 2 to 5 years that on average it takes for a company to become profitable? Or is it better for you to just go out and acquire a business that already is profitable, that has its stuff in place, and you can then really spend your asset, your time, in beginning to develop cash flow, to build that business, to take it to the next level, to do the thing that only you can do. Because you see, that's one of the keys that you need to really embrace is there is an element to business that is just hard work. You know, I mean, any of us that are business owners will tell you there's, you know, 90% of the stuff you do because you have to. But what you need to be developing in your company is for you to get to the place where you do the things that only you can do, and you empower other people to do the stuff that they can do. And that's how you begin to build a powerful, dynamic asset that is a business, is because then you stop root causing yourself as the solution to every problem. You don't go, oh, well, you know, this is wrong, so I need to go do XYZ to fix it. You begin to look around and say, these are the things I have to do. These are the things that I'm good at, that I'm talented at. But then, you know, maybe you're not good at accounting. There are people who love numbers. They spend all day. They, you know, it would make their day to make your books, your numbers sing. And so a lot of us as entrepreneurs, we fight our way through it. It's like, oh no, I'm supposed to know my numbers. You can have somebody just report those numbers to you, and they can live their best life, and you can make the best use of the number one biggest asset that you have, your time. Think about that for a second, because you only get 24 hours in a day, and you know, and you don't get them back, and you only get so many years in this life. And if you don't invest that time wisely, you're not going to get that investment back. So, you know, you may really want to, rather than spending your time spinning your wheels, building something from scratch, you may really want to take David's advice and go the easier, smarter, faster route. Find a company that's already developed and begin right there from where they are to invest your time and build that asset to something incredible, amazing, that makes a powerful dynamic change both in your life as well as in the world in general. Good stuff, huh? David's got a whole lot more for us that we're going to continue on after this break. We'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back. I'm here with David Barnett, and we are talking today about your business, about starting, selling, buying your business. What are the key fundamentals? And so one of the things that David talked about just before the break had to do with, a lot of times, it's really better for you to, to just go out and buy an already established business that has its stuff, its systems, its processes together. That's a better use of your time and gets you quicker, sooner, faster to operating in an investment realm with your business, meaning that what you're putting in is creating an outcome. It's creating profit. It's creating an increase. And so let's continue on with David and see what other secrets he has for us for really building strong and powerful businesses.
Whichever side of the equation you're at, there are some key things that a business needs to have to be purchasable, whether you're the one selling or buying it. So talk to us a little bit about what are the things that make a business appealing to be bought or to be the business you want to buy, either way?
Yeah, it's a great question, Steve, because, actually last fall, I put the finishing touches on my newest workshop, which is called Build a Business That People Will Want to Buy, because it was basically that question that you had that people were asking me. And the good news for entrepreneurs out there is that making your business more saleable, more desirable to own or purchase actually makes it more profitable and easier to run in the present. Because, of course, the value of a business is based on cash flow. So the more cash you can generate in your business, the more it's going to be worth and the more people will want to buy it because they want, people obviously want more profitable businesses. But as long as you don't sell it, of course, you get to enjoy that profit and those extra earnings. And the second big thing besides cash flow that people look for is they look for a business that they can envision themselves running. And if I walk into a business and there are little scraps of paper everywhere with notes written on them and people running around asking each other, did you call this client? Did you call this client? Or when are we supposed to drop this off? And you can see that there's chaos and disarray. Well, people cannot imagine themselves stepping right into the middle of that and being able to pick up the ball, right? Whereas if you have a business that everybody knows their job, there are job descriptions, there are business systems and processes, there are simple tools that have been built that help show where a customer is on their journey from order to fulfillment, for example, then it becomes easier for someone to see that they will be able to run the business. And it's that book, E-Myth by Michael Gerber, he put it into that book where he said, basically you have to make your business into almost what a franchise would deliver to someone, in that the franchise company gives you an operating manual with the systems and the processes, et cetera, so that almost anyone can really pick it up and learn how the business should be run. And that's what I teach people in the Build a Business That People Will Want to Buy program, is how you create those systems and processes so that the business becomes more saleable. And I it's funny because I used to try to consult with people or coach them through that process. And then finally, one day I realized that I needed a process. And so I actually have it distilled into what I call 12 plus one steps. Because 13 is an unlucky number, right, Steve?
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's the systems, it's the processes and the systems. That's what people want to see. And that's what your business has to have in order for people to want it and for it to be sold ultimately, I think.
Well, you know, a good friend of mine, Errol Abramson, who has started and sold 47 companies.
Wow.
Never had a failure. Multi-billionaire. Guy's amazing. Talking to him is like, you know, as a business owner, you all of a sudden feel like you're back in business kindergarten. he actually, when he's building his business from the start, he sets up a, this is who I intend to sell this company to. Now they may never sell it to them, but then you are looking at what are they looking for? You know, what do they need? What kind of systems and processes? How does the, you know, culture of that company work? So that then when you go to propose to them, hey, would you like to buy this company? It totally just fits right into their portfolio. And
yeah, you know, it's a great thing that you brought up that point, because in my workshop, what I talk about is I talk about the two classes of buyer that we see, and we call them financial buyers and strategic buyers. And financial buyers are basically people looking to replace an income. So if you think about an unemployed person or a new immigrant to the country or somebody who hates their job, they're out looking to buy a business because they need to create that cash flow to support themselves. And what makes that buyer interesting is that they're not just buying a business as an investor, but they're also purchasing a job, because they're going to end up becoming the owner manager of that business. Without, and imagine this kind of business, imagine a plumbing business, okay? Without systems and processes in place that show how the business is run, basically that business could only really ever be purchased by a plumber, right? Because they're going to have an understanding of what should be going on. If instead you take the plumbing business and you completely systematize it, so that you have plumbers and plumbers helpers and office staff, and everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing, and there's a plan to the marketing every year, there's a plan involved in purchasing, there's all kinds of systems already in place. Now anyone could see themselves buying and running that plumbing business. And most importantly, the second class of buyer, the strategic buyer. So the strategic buyer is someone who buys a business as an investment, either to run on its own or to fold it into another enterprise. And that kind of buyer will only buy a business that they can see can be managed from afar without being there, because they're not going to be there to run it. So now all of a sudden your plumbing example, the plumbing company can be bought by someone who is an electrician who sees it as a complementary add-on, or it can be purchased by a plumber in another city who already owns a plumbing business who sees it as a way for him to grow across the state, let's say. And so once you got the point where anybody could run it either from there or afar, now you can be purchased by the strategic buyer, and the market of who can buy opens up. And of course, the more potential buyers there might be for the business, the more easily it will be sold in terms of time, but then the better price you're going to get too, because maybe you can get more than one person interested at a time and have the price driven up a little bit for you.
And in the end, you know, even if you worked the business your whole life, you know, passed it on to your kids, and it becomes a generational company, like, you know, many companies we could mention. Ford Motor Company comes to my mind, you know, and I don't think there's a Ford at the head of that anymore, but there, you know, was for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. You know, even if that's what ends up happening, you still really need to develop a business that, you know, has the capability to, and the, what's the word I'm looking for? The, you know, the desire outside of itself to be purchased.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs out there, unfortunately, have the business plan or the succession plan of simply, I will live forever and never sell it, you know, because they never actually take the time to create a plan they never figure out, you know, if there's someone internally who could buy it or who externally could buy it. And the top five reasons that people end up selling businesses, only one of them is retirement. The other top reasons are burnout and fatigue, divorce, poor health, and the need to relocate. And so four of the top five reasons have nothing to do with you picking a day. They happen to people. They're part of life. And so when there's a pressing personal need to sell, if it's not ready to be sold, well, guess what? You're going to be looking for that financial buyer with the same kind of experience and the same kind of knowledge that the current owner has. So right there, you've just limited the field of buyers tremendously. And then if you can't find enough of them, what ends up happening is either the business starts to deteriorate, meaning the cash flow is reduced and the value of the business declines, or you just meet one buyer and you're forced to make a deal with them under terms that favor them. So by treating your business like any other asset, financial asset in your investment portfolio, and making sure that it's polished up and running well all the time, when one of those unscheduled things happens in your life and you suddenly have to sell, you're in a position to make it happen and make it happen more on your terms than on the buyer's. And so and that's what I teach people is you have to always be ready to sell. And in doing so, you get to run a business that's more easy, that's easier to run and more profitable. So you actually get paid to do this preparation.
Well, and even if you never sell it, to go back to being the strategic buyer, you should want to position yourself to be essentially the strategic buyer of your own company. So
that, to be able to leave the day to day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's funny because there have been a couple people, usually when people come to me, they're looking for help either to buy or to sell. And when I start talking about to sellers and we start talking about their timeline, if they have sufficient timeline, then I'll suggest that we work together to help make the business more saleable. And there have been a couple of people that once they actually start to get through the process and start to organize themselves a little bit better, they actually decide that they don't want to sell because they can then see the light at the end of the tunnel where they can see how, hey, wait a minute, I could actually, if I properly delegate not just tasks, but responsibilities, and that's the key difference between a big company and little companies, delegating responsibilities instead of tasks, I can see how I can run this business and still get away to Florida for 4 months every year, right? And when they start to see how it can happen, then all of a sudden, a lot of that pressure to get it ready to sell starts to diminish. And, you know, in this day and age of technology, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but more and more people are able to actively work in their business from afar. So I'm starting to see that more and more where people actually continue to do the things that they did maybe in place in their business, say in Canada, but they're doing it from Florida because they can operate in real time with computer systems and video systems and, you know, all that kind of technology. I would rather see people delegate the responsibilities and go away and have a real vacation, but more and more, this is the kind of thing that's going on.
Well, don't diminish the concept of having a real vacation, regardless of how busy you are. But it makes so much logical sense. And yet, because I know you're in the trenches with it every day, talk a little bit about all of the excuses, all the reasons why people just keep putting off setting their business up that way, or, you know, it comes to, like you said, that life event, and then they have to scramble. Why do we do that to ourselves?
I believe it has to do with the way people are wired with respect to an investment mentality. You know, it's very easy for, you know, if you look mathematically and you talk to a financial planner, most of them will tell you that if you save money religiously between the ages of 18 and 35, you probably then don't need to save ever again for your retirement, right? And just let compound interest work for you. But people don't do that. People wait until they're in their 40s and they panic, right? And I think it has to do with the fact that people very much are immediate creatures. They want instant gratification. They want to see the results. They want to see things happen now. And what you and I are talking about is an investment, not necessarily of money, but certainly of time. So you need to invest time to work on your business and make it into what you want But of course, people wait until the end of the day before they do this, and they're already tired at that point. And, you know, then they think, geez, I work hard, so I deserve a glass of wine, and I want to sit out on my back porch. And they just, the investment of time never happens because people don't make it a priority. When I work with clients on the 12+1 step program, I used to always have problems with people falling off the bus, so to speak. They'd get halfway through the systematization and then they would just stop. And I started scratching my head and went back to my old sales training. And in my old sales training for business-to-business sales, they would always keep repeating that you have to focus on what's in it for them. You know, what's in it for you, Mr. Customer? And so that's when I added the plus one. And the plus one is at the beginning of the whole process where I actually have people define what their life looks like in 10 years. So how much money do you earn? How many weeks of vacation do you get? Do you own a vacation property, et cetera? So we sketch out this life that they want to have. And then we start the 12-step process to build a business that will provide that life. And when people get halfway through and they kind of get tired and they don't want to carry on, I go, great, as long as you're happy with the life you have and you don't still want this one. And when I keep reminding them of the life they want, that's what keeps them on track and gets them focused. And then by the time they get to the end of the 12 steps, then they see how everything works together. And they're already starting to delegate things off of themselves and having a more joyous and restful life because they're putting less hours into running the business. And that's why, again, why I say if you prepare your business to be sold, you get an easier business to run in the present.
Man, I hope you wrote that down. That is good stuff. As Susie Carter would say, that's juicy. It becomes easier to run your business if you have it set up so that it's also easy to sell. Even if you never sell it, you can now live a good life. You can take advantage of every minute of every day of your life. David, that is so awesome, so empowering. I really hope a whole bunch of you wrote that down and you will begin to instill the concept of that into your business if it isn't already there. And of course, if you already got that, you know exactly what David's talking about. We've got our last commercial break coming up here on Thriving Entrepreneur, and then we will be right back with David to share more of how you can buy or sell a powerful business. You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author, and now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back. I hope that you did write that down before the commercial break because it really is powerful. David, that was so amazing because really, if you really think about it, having your business set up so that it is sellable makes your business easier to run and makes your life better here in the present. I know I loved hearing that. I hope you really did too. And so now we just want to leave you here with a couple of tips on some things that you can do wherever you are, start to finish, wherever in your business, to be able to really take use of what David shared with us today and show up powerfully tomorrow, today, in your business.
So I want to break up our tips that we're going to leave people with into you know, the two sides of the equation. So first of all, a person who wants to buy a business, what would be a couple of tips that you would give them that they could start doing right now if they're interested in buying a business?
Yeah, sure. You know, actually, I've got on my website, which is for people who want to buy a business, it's called businessbuyeradvantage.com. There is a download. It's the 21 stupid things that people do when trying to buy a business. And those are all the mistakes. And I don't focus on what the things are that people should do. Now, if somebody is planning on buying a business, if it's your dream, here's the number one step. Balance your household budget and start saving money. Because here's what's going to happen. When you get to the point where you want to buy a business, you are going to need some kind of equity when you buy or even start a business if you want to borrow. Because when you buy a business, the banker is going to want to see the opening balance sheet. And you have to have something of yours to put in, even if it's not money handed to the seller, even if it's money that you just put into your own business for operating capital or whatnot. They want to see something put in there. And number two, when you're getting into business for the first time, a lot of the credit decisions that lenders are going to make, because you don't have a business history, are going to be based on what you do personally. So if you manage your household budget properly and you pay your bills on time and you have savings, that is the number one step to setting yourself up to becoming a business owner, whether through startup or acquisition.
So it really does boil down to having your house in order. Like literally your house in order before you you want to go out and buy.
Yeah, because people, when they look at your business, if you know, even people who want to be your customer, you know, it's always a big eye opener, I think, when small businesses start to grow and people try to sell to bigger and bigger enterprises. And you don't just go out as a small business and sell to a Fortune 500. They want to know who you are, right? They realize that they have risk in making a purchase decision involving you. What if you don't deliver? What if you drop dead, right? So even customers can decide to take a look at who you are. Suppliers, certainly, you know. Small business people often have problems with credit because suppliers to the businesses they own keep wanting to ding the owner's personal credit report. And the reason they want to do that is because they know that if the owner of a business can't manage their own finances, then it's pretty likely that the finances of the business aren't managed very well either.
So now let's talk to sellers. You've put in the systems in place. You've done all those things. What are the, you know, number one or top tips to people who want to sell their business or need to sell their business?
Yeah. I've got another download. It's called the 12 things to do before you consider selling your business. It's a free one. It's at howtosellmyownbusiness.com. And basically, when you make the decision to go to market, you have to have your business packaged properly, which means having all the information together that a buyer is going to want to see. There is nothing worse than having a buyer who's interested in your business and then making them wait because you forgot to get some papers from your accountant drawn up. You need to have everything together so that you can make a compelling and competent discussion with a buyer about what your business is, what they're going to get, and why it's worth whatever money it is that you're looking for. And then closely behind that, number two, is having the right asking price on it. Selling a business is not like selling a house or a piece of fine art. You know, people tell me all the time, well, it's worth what a buyer will pay. No, it isn't. Businesses are worth a function of their cash flow versus the risk associated with that industry. So you could get someone to agree to overpay for your business, but by the time you get to the end of the process, they will be going to other people like bankers and such, and that deal, if it's overpriced, will derail. So your business has a certain value based on the cash flow and based on the industry. And you need to figure out and get your business properly valued to know what a reasonable asking price is, because the buyers who are what I call the qualified buyers, they've got good credit, they have savings in the bank, they have experience maybe in the industry, they know what businesses are likely worth in a ballpark sense. So they might have an idea that machine shops go for a certain multiple of cash flow or a certain percentage of sales. If you try to sell your machine shop and you ask for way too much money, these competent, qualified buyers are going to take one look at it and go, wow, this person has no idea what they're doing. I can't waste my time with them. And so you actually don't get to meet them. You don't get to sit down and deal with those competent, qualified buyers because they think that you're, out to lunch. Who you do meet, though, are the people that go around lowballing everyone and kicking every tire in town. And so you waste a lot of time with the people who can't actually put the deal together anyway because you price yourself out of the market. And then the third thing, Steve, is having an understanding about the terms under which businesses are sold. So I had a very sad occasion a little while ago. A business seller came to me because they'd been trying to sell their business for almost 2 years. And I did an evaluation for them. And then at the end of the evaluation, I gave them some scenarios and likely terms of sale for the business because most businesses are not sold on cash terms. So normally there's a certain amount of down payment and then there's a series of payments over time depending on how the deal is structured. And when I showed them the likely scenarios for selling, the guy just felt awful because he had actually said no to a deal just like that. But he didn't know that it was a good offer because he wasn't properly prepared.
So let's leave the people with some information about you. You dropped a whole bunch of URLs during the midst of all of this. What is the best way for people to be able to go a little deeper in this conversation with you and, and have contact with you? What websites can they go to?
Yeah, well, my blog site is kind of the central location for everything. It's davidcbarnett.com. And on there, they're going to find a tab called Work with David where they can be led to the other different websites. So there's a buyer site and a seller site, et cetera. And on the blog, there's over 300 posts. I've got about 200 videos on my YouTube channel. And what I always start everyone off with is I say, look, if you're going to buy or sell a business, you have to start with education. So I've got different books. I've got the YouTube channel. There's over 100 videos just on buying and selling small businesses. There's a whole bunch on managing small businesses, stuff like that. So they can soak all that stuff in. Some of my books that talk about buying and selling businesses. And then I've got my online courses on a couple of different topics. So people can educate themselves to learn about this process. They can learn more about me and get to have a feeling of who I am. And a lot of people who get into it and they start doing my stuff, they eventually hire me to help them with an actual transaction. And I always kiddingly say that I'm kind of in the insurance business because most of the buyers that I help are looking at making a decision anywhere between $200,000 and $1 million. And a little bit of consulting work with me to make sure that they're not making a big mistake gives people a lot of peace of mind. And then from the selling side, because most businesses are sold because of a pressing personal need, the important factor largely comes down to time. People don't want to waste 2 years trying to do a deal. They want to get as quick a deal as they can, which means having all their ducks in a row as far as valuation and packaging, et cetera. And that's where I help people there, help them save time by getting them properly prepared to meet those buyers, coaching them through the discussion with those buyers, and letting them know what a reasonable offer will look like so when they see it, they can act.
And so you can get in further contact with David by going to davidcbarnett.com. David, thanks so much for spending some time with us today, helping us understand how to both structure our business as well as buy or sell a business.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me on, and I look forward to meeting some of your listeners.
So how does this apply to you today? I mean, some of you are just beginning to think about getting a business, and there were some great tips to be able to look at how can you go and buy a business as opposed to starting it from scratch. Some of you, you're right in the thick of things and you want to remember to position your business so that it is sellable, so that, so that it makes your life easier in the present as well, but so that it also really truly becomes, like you said at the beginning of the show, an asset, something that is building value throughout the time that you're spending your time, because in the end, you really want to maximize your time so that you maximize the return on that investment. But there's another group of you, you know, and that's all of our authors that are out there. Kathy and I, of course, help best-selling authors. We help people who have wanted to get their book out there for years and years, finally become best-selling authors. And the reason why it was so important for me to have David on the show to talk to you guys is you need to understand that the book that you're writing, the book that you're going to put out there, is a marketing tool. It's not going to be the thing that's going to make you the millions of dollars, but it is going to be the thing that's going to lead you to the money. And so you want to make sure that you have your structure and your systems in place right up front as you go through this journey so that you can maximize your time, your effort, your energy. It's really important. A lot of times as authors, you know, we're highly creative. And we spend our time up in our head thinking about how to put together the words so that we can impact the world. But it's also important for us to understand that we need that structure. And sometimes that structure comes very easily for us. And for others, like I said, especially those of us that can be highly creative, we may even need somebody else to come in and help us set up that structure so that we can impact the world like we're meant to do. If we don't have those systems in place, there are people out there, and I say this all the time, but it's true, somebody's out there looking for that message that you have, that thing that you do so easily that you probably have discounted it completely in your own life. And if we don't have systems in place to help us be able to reach those people, we'll never reach those people. And the reason why I bring that up is because it really is the thing that we need to focus on when we think about writing our book. Is who are we serving? So we've talked a lot about investment, the investment of our time and building a business that's growing and different things like that. But in the end, the investment of the knowledge that we have in people, that's what your book is all about. I've heard Lisa Nichols say it so many times, your message was never for you. And it's never going to be about you. It's for the people that you're meant to serve. So I do hope that you will join Kathy and I over at bestsellersguild.com. It's our free Facebook group. It's a great way to get started so that we can get your message out into the world. You do have a voice. You do have a message that does need to be shared. And the world is waiting for it. So now's your time to begin to reach out and share what you've learned. There's always people that are 5 and 10 steps ahead of you, but there's also always those people that are 5 and 10 steps behind you that need what you've learned so far in your life. Because you are uniquely brilliant. You were created very specifically for a purpose. And the world needs you. Please know that Kathy and I are here to help you live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur. We're here to help you share your message with the world and make the impact that you are meant to make and that honestly only you can make. And so until next time, I hope you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.